Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Take the Black Live, the one, the only, the singular show where we talk about all things sci-fi, fantasy, movies, TV, books, giant hills of sand, giant worms who are also men, who are also kings, wheels, time, houses, dragons, such things as that. Hello, everybody. Hello, Andrew. Good to see you. Has been a while. I'm excited you're here, too. Hello, Martha Lilly. Good to see you, too. Good to see everybody. And good to see you, Dan. I'm going to ask you a question. I mean this from the bottom of my heart. How are you?
I'm good. Generally speaking, I'm good, you know. There's been some interesting... It hasn't been a crazy wild time in fantasy sci-fi land, but there's been some cool stuff going on, especially where the Wheel of Time is concerned. I'm ready to talk about all the hills, the sand hills, and especially the hills of Tanchico. But how are you, Dan? And how's everyone in the chat? Good to see you in there, Ash and Andrew and Martha.
Not bad at all. I think there's tons of stuff happening. I'm not going to say anything beyond this, but I want everybody to know, because I want them to be impressed. I have seen a very hotly anticipated upcoming program that is coming soon, but I can neither talk about it nor even name it. So you all just guess what I'm talking about.
That sounds serious.
We have a lot to discuss. Let's start with the Wheel of Time, like a brief stopover in Randland to just update people and talk about the continued inspiring battle to save this show from the deep, dark pit of cancellation. Daniel, what's the latest?
Yeah, so basically this week, you know, there's been this ongoing fan campaign that's being run by a bunch of folks through this website, savewatt.com. They have a petition they've been doing. They've been doing letter writing, mailing stuff to streamer offices, all sorts of things. They did a GoFundMe to support billboards and a sky banner like that one the Expanse used. And this week, the billboards and the sky banner all are happening. So there's been a lot of excitement in that fandom because, you know, it's been bannered across the sky, Save the Wheel of Time over Amazon Studios and stuff like that. But let's start with some stuff that I saw, I think, late last night, because these billboards are literally going up like yesterday, today. They'll be up for days. Some of them will be up for like months, depending on, or a month, depending on where and which ones. So the first picture, we've got one from Sao Paulo, Brazil, which is kind of fun because, you know, the Brazilian, there was like a Brazilian super fan who bought a billboard in New York City. saying save the Wheel of Time. So now that was not part of this fan campaign. So now the fan campaign is buying some in Sao Paulo saying Salve Roda do Tempo. I'm sorry, I don't speak Portuguese. But yeah, so that's all very exciting. So that one went up. We've got another picture of one in New York City. And then, yeah, that one went up, I think, today. And then, of course, the big exciting thing that happened yesterday, which we wrote about, go find it on the site, which also has the locations of all these billboards if you want to go find them. But yesterday, a sky banner flew across Culver City, L.A. I think this photo was taken by Gus from Wheel Takes Pod. But yeah, so this little plane, little biplane, flew around. It's called Culver City Studio. So basically, like, this compound where, like, Amazon and Apple and Netflix and a bunch of other studios, they all rent out space in Culver City Studios. And this little plane just flew laps around it. I think I heard it flew like 47 circles around this little compound. And yes, producer Richard has put the website in the chat if you want to learn more, savewatt.com. But yeah, so it's a lot of excitement. You know, we have confirmation that people in the Amazon offices saw the plane flying around, saw the banner. The show's book expert, Sarah Nakamura, shared a photo that she said, someone sent this to me from inside the Amazon offices, so we know they saw it. So yeah, how are you feeling about all this, Dan? Like, what are your thoughts? Because this is coordinated stuff to see this many. You know, they have things going up all over the globe. There's also a huge banner in Leicester in England, or maybe it's London, Leicester Square, London.
Sounds right.
Yeah, in England. I know there are other ones in Los Angeles, so they're really going hard.
I'm just impressed. That's it. We keep highlighting it because it's very impressive. It's impressive what fans can do when they put their time and their effort and their money into a cause. And this is one of the most well-organized campaigns seen in a long time. I don't think it's going to do any. I really don't. I just doubt it. That's the cynic in me that's going to revive anything. But man, if it did work, it would be a moment of utter triumph for these people who are putting their time and effort into this.
Yes,
I wonder how much a sky banner costs. How much does it cost to pay a pilot to fly around in circles 40 times with a banner behind him?
Beats me. I'm sure these people know because they just did this. But we do know that they raised $32,800 for all of this stuff.
Incredible.
So some, yeah, which is amazing. And it they did that in like less than a week. Like, it really wasn't that crazy of an amount of time. Hey, Arosa, speak of the devil. We're talking about Wheel of Time, the Save the Wheel of Time campaign, and all the amazing stuff it's been doing. So, yeah, I mean, at this point, because, you know, you're right, shows very, very rarely get saved, you know, but this is probably the most coordinated campaign like this I've seen, at least since The Expanse, if not ever. To see billboards like, you know, when Raised by Wolves was trying to get saved, like, I love me some Raised by Wolves. They had like a single banner in New York City because it just didn't have the fan base of something like the Wheel of Time, which this kind of does show, you know, like, this is a large enough fan base to be supporting billboards across the world, all these things like that, versus a smaller show that maybe couldn't, or like The Acolyte's another one that got canceled, didn't really have any of this stuff kind of come of that.
Sure.
So these fans are willing to put their money where their mouth is and say, give us more seasons of this show that is adapting this very famous, beloved book series that really does deserve to come back. But yeah, we'll see.
Deserves it a lot.
Yeah.
If only we lived in a world where this kind of thing was, you know, I feel like when this kind of fan campaign thing was in its sort of infancy, I don't know if I want to say that, like, when in the early 2000s, when these kind of sort of things started to happen, I feel like studios might have been surprised to the point of wanting to factor them into their decisions.
Yeah.
I almost wonder if they've gotten used to it now, because we know studios will try to avoid doing anything unless it makes them money. Like, that's the way studios work. And it's almost like, unless these campaigns can go full shock and awe and show them something new, the potential effectiveness is lessened, because studios can, I don't know, they're a little more used to them. But this campaign is going shock and awe. And I agree with Andrew Haley that if it doesn't come back, nothing respect fans for doing this. They have a future in organizing. They should be hired. Maybe they are organizers.
Yeah, totally. I think
1600.
Yeah. So that's, someone put in the chat, the flying sign was around 1600. Which, yeah, I agree with you in terms of like the sheer amount of organization. Like, it really can't be overstated how impressive it is, and how coordinated, and, you know, they're not only doing all these things, they're making sure they're getting people, you know, boots on the ground to take pictures of them, which is then giving them even more life because they're getting posted across social media. Like, I saw showrunner Rafe Judkins shared the Sky banner, as well as like Yosha Stradowski and Iola Smart, who played Avienda, and like a bunch of other people. So yeah, it is. I think at this point it's safe to say, if the show does come back, these fans will be a huge, maybe even the main reason why, like a huge part of why, if it does get saved. But I do think
you're such an inspirational thing, because algorithms are taking over more and more of why decisions are made on corporate levels in studios about TV shows, movies. And this is like a human targeted thing, right?
Yes.
This is, someone gets it up to Tim Cook, or Tim Cook looks out the window of his 1 mile stretch limousine and sees the Sky banner and decides to put it on Apple. It's, in a way, it's old fashioned, which is, again, very inspirational, very cool, and I hope it works.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths and sometimes heights to ensure the power is always flowing, which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn. And you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.
Which, you know, it's interesting, because the only other, like, you know, there have been instances of other shows getting saved, but they weren't, I don't know that they were like this. Like, you know, like Lucifer got like another season or two on Netflix. But the big one that this makes me think of is The Expanse, of course, which was also very human focused, where that got canceled after three seasons at Sci-Fi. People really loved it, but it wasn't quite as much of a hit as Sci-Fi wanted. And it was an expensive show to produce. And they, you know, those fans did things like fly a Sky banner outside of Amazon HQ. And Jeff Bezos is a fan of The Expanse books. So it did, it targeted that human element a little bit more. But I do think you're right that, you know, studios are probably a little more, I don't want to say hardened, but they've seen these campaigns come and go. You know, they are used to canceling shows and having fans outcry on the internet where all the outcry is amplified and whatever. And then everyone moves on, you know, like Shadow and Bone not getting saved, even though there was a petition, I am sure. But this having so many real world things makes it harder to brush off in that way. And I think that's part of why, like, they're having, like, on the Save Wild website, like, they're having people send physical letters to, you know, to these offices, to, like, Apple's offices and whatever, because it's harder to ignore physical mail being dumped on your desk than it is to be like, oh, someone sent me a link and I get sent hundreds of links every day. It's easy to ignore that. So yeah, this, fingers crossed, how wonderful fingers would crossed. It be for the Wheel of Time so to continue. Wonderful. There's one thing I do want to ask you about, if you think this holds water. So there's a Scoop channel that reports on all this stuff. What up? A lot of great news. Seems to have some inside sources. John, the guy who runs that channel, said in a recent video that he had heard from his inside sources that kind of the soft, like, end of the line cancellation date, where it'll be like the show is too far gone to be saved, is like late August.
Okay.
Like, essentially, that's when some of the contracts will lapse. So at that point, they'd have to really renew everything with all the actors and the crew and whatever. Mm-hmm. What do you make of that? Like, do you think we really have this, essentially, this month and a half to 2 month window here where anything could happen?
No, I can't speak to the exact end date, but yeah, it makes perfect sense on a show this big with a cast this falling and a crew this big and massive. The longer it goes on, the more time other folk have to get other jobs and the harder it is to open back in. So yeah, the sooner the better.
Yeah, that's pretty fair. I mean, we've seen a small one of these already, even with the book expert, who she's read the books like something crazy, like 14 or 15 times. Sarah Nakamura, who is working on the Wheel of Time, is now working with iWatt Studios, which...
Oh, no.
Well, I think this is a push. So Nakamura is very, very well regarded in this kind of fandom, very communicative, and people really like her. So I think this is their start of a push for them to try to flip the narrative on iWatt Studios, because for listeners who may not know, iWatt Studios used to be Red Eagle Entertainment. They're the ones who made that rights grab middle of the night Wheel of Time premiere that was just pilot, rather, that was Billy Zane being losing his mind in a room for like 15 minutes. That was just the prologue of the Wheel of Time. They sued Robert Jordan's widow for defamation when she called them on it. So I think they're trying to really move past that, because they do own the rights to all of this stuff, including the game that is potentially being made and the movies and whatever. But the point I was trying to make is that Sarah Nakamura is now working as their lead narrative and, like, fan engagement person, basically. And that's a position where if the show came back, I'm sure she could still come back. But it is, when I saw this news on, like, Dragonmount, I was like, oh, this feels a little like people are beginning to the fellowship is breaking, as it were. So, yeah, it seems like time is of the essence. So Tim Cook, look up, see that banner, and make some good choices.
Yeah. Let's not dwell over much on this. It is a bit of a sad topic mixed with a joyful, exuberant one.
Yeah.
Let's go on to something. Hello, Julie. I'm sorry it's early where you are. If we could live in Australia and beam out of there, we would. I was wondering about a topic of a franchise that is in very good health, and I don't have to worry immediately about it being canceled anytime soon. Dune. Based on the books by Frank Herbert, set on the desert planet of Arrakis, giant sandworms everywhere, people trying to overthrow galactic emperors, or between movies, or between TV shows, but have some really interesting news I want to talk about, because it seems to imply some crazy things. Okay, So Dune Part 2 came out last year, right? Yeah, last year. Mm-hmm. Everyone loved it. Adaptation of a classic sci-fi book. Timothy Chalamet becomes the Emperor of the Universe after he boots up Christopher Walken, as would happen. we know there's a Dune Part 3 coming, going to adapt Dune Messiah, the next book in Frank Herbert's series. Cool book, interesting book. I'm sure it'll be good. More of a kind of an internal, intimate book, not a giant sci-fi.
Much smaller.
Lots of action.
Yeah,
which could be cool. Story. Like, I love the idea that Dune is this, at once, like a big sci-fi tentpole, balls-to-the-wall action-adventure special effects series, but also has the kind of integrity to be smaller and weirder and stranger. Speaking of, it came out that they have cast in Dune Part 3, based on Dune Messiah, a couple of new actors. Nakoa Wolf-Momoa, who is the son of Jason Momoa, who was already in the Dune movies as Duncan Idaho, will play Leto the Second, and Ida Brooke, who is in your favorite show, Silo, will play Ganima. Do you know her, by the way? Do you remember her from Silo?
I don't off the top of my head. I'm going to look it up while you vamp about this for a second.
Sure. Okay, because I have some things to vamp. All right.
Yeah.
I don't mean to bore everyone here who doesn't know the deep, dark Dune lore, but basically, these two characters, Leto 2 and Ganima, they're casting teenagers to play him, Jason Momoa's son. It's a little weird because in the next Dune book, Dune Messiah, these two characters are born at the end of the book and they're only infants. So it's like, okay, so they're going to cast older actors, which means they're going to either jump forward in time at the end or there'll be some kind of vision. I know that we saw Anya Taylor-Joy as a grown-up Aaliyah in the first movie or the last movie, even though she was right then a fetus, but we still managed to get her in there somehow. But if they're casting these two roles, it has me thinking, oh, are they planning to adapt the Dune book that comes after Dune Messiah, Children of Dune, where Leto 2 and Ganima are the main characters? And will they just have these people return for that? Because, you know, that's kind of the strategy with Anya Taylor-Joy. You get her out there as Aaliyah, even though she's a fetus in the movie, and then she'll be in Dune Part 3 as a more grown, creepy Aaliyah Atreides.
Yeah.
With her strange eyes and her prescience and her has the knowledge of a god, even though she's a baby. Dune stuff. It could be a similar thing where they want to front these two characters as older kids, teenagers, who are older than they are in the book, whatever, in Dune Part 3 to set up Dune Part 4. Because Denis Villeneuve, who directs the Dune movies, done a great job of directing the Dune movies, and said he's out after Dune Part 3, so he wouldn't do Children of Dune. But the movies have been hits, and I can definitely understand why the studio might want to keep going and make Children of Dune maybe more than Children of Dune, regardless of what Denis Villeneuve does with his time. I'm going to turn it over to you in a second, but I have to take it even further because
talk about it. Talk about the God Emperor.
Excited.
Man. Do it.
Is that let's say this all comes to pass. Let's say Jason Momoa's kid is in Dune Part 3. That sets up Dune Part 4, Children of Dune. After Children of Dune, the story skips ahead thousands of years. Leto 2, played by Nakoa Wolf-Momoa, Jason Momoa's son, is now an immortal, thousands-year-old god emperor who is half man, half sandworm. He's been alive for thousands of years. Artist depiction up there in the screen now with Siona. he rules the galaxy with an iron fist. He has an army of followers. He hoards the spice. And also, he's a talking giant sandworm. Like, would they do that? Would Jason Momoa's kid play the God Emperor of Dune if they had God Emperor of Dune on the big screen? Come to the theater and see this movie where a big giant sandworm man pontificates about reality for 2 hours. I would be so... I'd feel something when it happened. It'd be a giant risk, a giant swing. It'd be the weirdest big budget movie to ever be made. And I want it to happen. Daniel, am I spinning out or are my kind of predictions somewhat reasonable?
Hi, I'm Richard Karn. and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free Pocket Pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.
I don't think you're spinning out. I think this is the logical thing to ponder here. You know, you're right. Casting an older actor, I think there are basically two routes here. One is there's going to be some kind of vision that shows, you know, sure, Paul's kids when they're older. The other is that there's a time jump or something, which we did hear a rumble that's the case, but it wasn't from the most reliable source. So you're taking it with a grain of salt. And the obvious implication is casting Nakoa Wolf-Momoa and Ida Brooke, who played in Silo, Shirley in the flashbacks, Shirley as a teenager, casting them so that they can play a larger role in future movies. I mean, Children of Dune is an all around solid sci-fi.
Totally.
Good book, would probably make a really good movie.
Or two. Like, it's big enough to do two, I think. Never mind. Go on.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fair. Messiah is not. So I'm glad that they're doing one movie for Dune Messiah. They're not stretching it. Mm-hmm. But now I almost wonder, like, it's funny that you say two movies for Children of Dune, because, like, what if they do another trilogy and it's two Children of Dunes, Children of Dune Part 1 and 2, and then God Emperor is the end of the trilogy? Because, like, here's the thing. Like, God Emperor of Dune is such a weird, wonky book. Like, it is sci-fi doing the wild sci-fi stuff that only sci-fi can do and get away with. And, like, it would get people talking if they actually went through with it, admit, like, that it would be a bold swing, but it's also like, holy shit, they're doing it. Like, people would show up for that movie. I don't care. Like it feels like it's not like an, the kind of risk where it's like, studios, what are you thinking? Like, it's a risk where it's like, this will pay off for you. Even if the movie's terrible, them getting to do God Emperor of Dune, I think would pay off. Because it's such a weird concept, people will show up to see it.
It makes pants dream. There'll be like interviews where Nakoa Wolf-Momoa is like, to prepare for this role, I bought a colony of worms and just watched them for days on end. And I would love that.
Yeah, I hope, you know, if they do this, this is the start of, you know, Jason Momoa's son's long and sprawling acting career as a worm man. You know, do it all practical. Do it all typecast. He's only in things that have to do with worms from now on. But, you know, give us a practical God Emperor of Dune. Put him in a suit, you cowards, where it's just his face at the top of this thing.
We're getting way ahead of ourselves. But
well, that's... I can see it happening. It's the logical question. It's the logical question when you hear Leto II and Ghanima have been cast, and cast early. Mm-hmm. It is like, you know, there's only one book between Messiah and God Emperor of Dune. So it's not like we're talking way in the distance, you know. Mm-hmm. It is like, if they do a fourth Dune, like, this is what's next.
Ash says, then Heretics of Dune and Chapter House Dune, the two other Dune books that Frank Herbert wrote before he died, those get even weirder. I mean, but hey, if people turn up for this hypothetical God Emperor of Dune movie, hand over all their cash, get the giant worm-shaped popcorn bucket, and just it sells out, they'd have no choice. And then they would get sexy space vixens who use sex as a weapon to disarm and trap men. That'll go over real well.
Sure. Yeah, I think whether we ever get Heretics of Dune or Chapter House Dune, I feel like if we get, you know, the fact that Dune exists now on the big screen in such a good way that we can actually contemplate this is amazing. Like, like what a wonderful thing for sci-fi fans who have loved the Dune books for so long. Like, this is a moment, and like all the kudos to Denis Villeneuve for making it happen, because none of it happens without him. But if we get God Emperor of Dune, like I'll go watch more Dune movies, but I could walk away happy knowing that we got to the point of the giant worm emperor. You know, like, I need that more so even than Children of Dune. I'm like, we need God Emperor now. So yeah, we're maybe getting ahead of ourselves, but I think it's reasonable, just like the risk they would take on this movie.
That's all I wanted to say, really. I just wanted to throw it out there that this could be the path the Dune franchise is walking down, and I wouldn't say no.
No, I wouldn't either. I'm glad, you know, that Villeneuve is getting to work sooner rather than later on Dune Part 3. I know he said he wanted to take a break after Dune Part 2 and do something else, and then he kind of changed his mind because he kept thinking about it. It is a huge question who could possibly follow up in his shoes. I feel like they need
Colin Trevorrow.
God. I mean, I feel like I haven't seen enough of Colin Trevorrow's movies. Right? Didn't he do one of, he did some of the Jurassic World movies,
I think, yeah.
I feel like Gareth Edwards is one I wouldn't mind.
Literally just thinking Gareth Edwards.
Although
I don't know why. What did Gareth Edwards do? I literally just, it went in my head. Gareth Edwards should do it. Who's Gareth Edwards? I don't know, but he should do it.
Ironically, Gareth Edwards is doing the new Jurassic Park movie, but he also did The Creator, which was, that's the one where it's like, all right, Gareth Edwards can have the gig, because that was like an original sci-fi movie that was really good and like had the artistry behind it. Like, it's a very well-made movie, and he did it on a budget of like $80 million. Like, it was, compared to what these movies typically cost, it was very cheap. The other one, I'm pretty sure he directed Rogue One as well.
I think you're right. Yeah. How about Hideo Kojima? That guy's weird. You know, How about Raised by Wolves boy?
Well, he's the writer more than a director. Get Aaron Guzikowski. So we're talking about him because there was Death Stranding news. I don't know if that's in the lightning round.
It is, yeah.
Okay, so we'll talk about it then. I mean, Aaron Guzikowski helping write God Emperor of Dune is a top tier choice. That's a really good fit, actually, in my opinion.
I agree. Again, way out of ourselves. Fun side topic. I'll just say it right here. Okay, so it's June 18th, 2025. I just want to refer back to this. I'm so glad to be buying my ticket today to see God Emperor of Dune, starring EGOT winner Nakoa Wolf Momoa as the worm. All right. And we'll come back here in a few years and see if I was right.
Yes, I'm so here for this. This is my favorite news of the week, for sure, that we are getting officially confirmed God Emperor of Dune, because why else are you casting adults? Also, I know we have to move on, but can I just point out, it's kind of funny the lengths Denis Villeneuve is going to avoid working with little children in these movies. Because, like, you know, in the book, Anya Taylor-Joy's character, she's born. She's a little kid in the original Dune book.
Little kid, yeah.
She's a little kid. You can watch the David Lynch version if you want a more maybe accurate age-wise depiction of what that character was like. And Denis Villeneuve said he didn't want to work with a kid to do that role, because it's supposed to be a kid with basically the mind of an immortal being, essentially.
That's Frank Herbert's favorite thing. Babies with the brains of adults.
Yes.
Frank Herbert loves babies who have the brains of adults. Why? Consult a Freudian psychologist. I don't know, but he loves that.
Few things are more disconcerting than babies with the minds of adults. I guess that's my takeaway from reading Dune. But yeah, so he kept Anya Taylor-Joy's character as a fetus to then show what she'd be like as an adult. Mm-hmm. So we can now move on to her being an adult. We never had to see her as a weird little adult child. And now we're casting older versions of Leto II and Ghanima. Once again, kind of setting the stage for maybe we can just skim past some of their early childhood stuff. So kudos to you, Denis Villeneuve, for knowing what you like on a set.
Hating
and that,
kids.
That is not working with little children.
All right. I also want to talk about today something that is in the news that James Gunn, writer, director, raconteur, Guardians of the Galaxy director, new manager of the DC Cinematic Universe, is saying about franchise in general. We're talking about franchise, right? We're talking about Wheel of Time franchise, Fear Speed, Dead in the Water.
About what?
About the film industry, about his rivals, about life, the universe, and everything. About, I'll just read it. So James Gunn, Guardians of the Galaxy writer, director, and now manager of the DC Cinematic Universe, is taking a bit of a stab at his old stomping grounds, talking about there's been a lot of talk recently about how movie theaters are dying, movies are dying, people aren't going to see movies much numbers as they used to, which is kind of true. And then you see things like How to Train Your Dragon doing well, you see things like Sinners doing well, and you wonder if that's really true. He does not think it is. His opinion is that too many movies are being made with incomplete or bad screenplays, and that's why people are not seeing it. It's not, it doesn't have to do with they're distracted by their screens at home, or that, you know, they've too hooked into video games, or that the movies just haven't been good enough. They just couldn't have not been good enough. And he has an opinion on why Marvel, the franchise, has, well, I'll just read his own words. He basically thinks that the pandemic era post Disney Plus time, when Disney was mandating that Marvel get out X number of TV shows, movies to draw subscribers to Disney Plus, was real bad, saying that that wasn't fair, it wasn't right, and it killed them. They're not dead, but I don't think people would really dispute that big franchises like Marvel and Star Wars just do not feel exciting like they used to. I'm not as excited by them. I remember 2015, like the Force Awakens Star Wars, it was 10 years ago, and there was such a giant hubbub around it. There was such a feeling of it was an event. Everyone was talking about it. I remember Avengers Endgame. People were not getting enough of it. And now something like the Star Wars Acolyte show came out, and it just passed by without a blink. Even something like Andor, which was really successful, seemed to kind of come and go. Thunderbolts came out. I didn't see it. I heard it was okay. Mm-hmm. See? Like,
I heard it was good.
I heard it was good. But yeah, people are just not excited. And I mean, I think we all agree with him, but how much do you agree with James Gunn that this oversaturation really did a number on these franchises? And is it salvageable? And are they actually dead, or just something that isn't quite dead that I can't think of?
I completely agree with all of James Gunn's points here. I agree with him that the reason why the movie industry is, I don't know if I would say it's dying, but I would say it's struggling. I would say studios are struggling to find, you know, direction, maybe because they're being led so much by big IP franchises that they think can juice their numbers and whatever. Jeez. I do think that there is an exhaustion with a lot of the movie going public with those sorts of, I don't want to call them soulless franchise continuations, but you really see that it is not just a people don't want to go to the movies problem. When something like Sinners comes out, and through word of mouth that, like, this is a great movie, like, is setting records, and it's an original movie, not based on anything else, and it's just a good movie. It's just a really good movie that Ryan Coogler wanted to make And he made it, and it was awesome.
Oppenheimer,
and
the other year, is a biography about a nuclear scientist, made $1 billion at the box office. Like, this kind of thing can't happen.
I would say, even though I'm hesitant, because this is technically an IP, but it had a film auteur behind it, Barbie is kind of in this category too. Because, like, however you feel about the merchandising aspect of it, like, Greta Gerwig is a visionary. She brought her filmmaker sensibility to the thing. And I think that's kind of what people are craving more than, like, you know, I keep seeing ads. Another Marvel movie I haven't seen is Captain America: Brave New World.
I also skipped that one.
And, like, I was excited for the flip to the new Captain America. I like the idea of it being Sam Wilson a lot. And I really like Anthony Mackie in that part. Yeah. But, like, I saw an ad that was, like, part of him fighting the Red Hulk. And even just watching that clip on YouTube just felt sterile and unexciting. And, like, you know, things we had seen 100 times before. And there's no real reason we're seeing it again, aside from Marvel has a mandate to keep making more money. So on the one hand, I agree with that part of his assessment on the film industry. On the other hand, what he's saying about Marvel getting a mandate to help launch Disney Plus, this is not speculation. We know this for a fact. People have written about this in books. Like, I'm pretty sure Bob Iger, who was the CEO, he left Disney, and then Bob Chapek took over right when this happened. And it was Bob Chapek's mandate that he had Marvel and Star Wars announce like 20 projects to back up Disney Plus when it launched. And this is also part of why Star Wars, like, they announced like 20 things before they were ready to, and we've since seen a bunch of them fall through. So I do very much agree with him that those mandates, which seem like they primarily came from that interim CEO, Bob Chapek, who then got canned and Bob Iger came back because Disney was in such a bad place with this stuff. That I do think that severely tarnished, I would say, both Marvel and Star Wars as brands. It exhausted people on them. It kind of killed our trust that when they release things, they'll be really good and they're not just trying to milk us for money. Your point about The Force Awakens is a great, perfect point, because at that point, no one ever thought they would get another Star Wars movie. Mm-hmm. So it was a huge deal that Disney bought the rights and was going to make another one.
It was only 10 years ago. And then 10 years later, everything's changed. And now it feels like we can't get a break.
Yeah. It's interesting. So Chris in the chat says, there is so much available to watch these days, so big franchises have suffered, and also the time it takes between movies and new seasons is way too long.
It is this weird balancing act, because you have to hit the right time where it's long enough to miss it, but not long enough to forget about it. And that is a difficult thing to hit.
Yes.
Like, we talk about TV shows taking too long. And if you ask me, like, Star Wars and Marvel, like, putting out a TV show or a movie a few times a year, that seems like it's not long enough.
Yeah.
And there's like a medium here that must be harder to hit than we think, because no one seems to be able to hit it.
Well, you know, I feel like there are people who kind of have figured some of this stuff out. Like, I will say, you know, Brandon Sanderson, he's one of my good examples of this. Mm-hmm. So, like, he puts out stuff constantly. No one ever is like, man, Brandon Sanderson, I miss when he wrote books, because the dude's releasing a dozen books a year. But for the Stormlight Archive, his big main series, he does not put them out closer than like 3 years apart. He very intentionally separates them to leave kind of that amount of space where people aren't going to feel exhausted by it. They'll kind of be eager for it when it comes around. One of my favorite, this is a little off in the weeds, but it's the same idea. One of my favorite rock bands, Alter Bridge, does this same thing where they intentionally space their albums around 3 years apart so that they don't oversaturate their listeners. And I think those sorts of lessons, like Marvel and Star Wars, are probably since the Disney Plus era, the two most egregious examples, like maybe in all of entertainment, of huge brands being mismanaged in a way that just totally killed all consumer goodwill.
I think you're right. Okay, next question is there a path back? Because I will say, it feels like there are two big movies around the corner that I do feel like are getting a ton of buzz. I feel like we're going to turn out for Fantastic Four. I feel like people are getting genuinely excited for that. And I feel like that Superman movie does have a lot of genuine buzz behind it. They could both flop. I could be wrong. I predict those will both do very well.
Yeah.
And it's kind of been long enough since the mandate period for them to have rearranged things a bit and thought about how are we going to really make a really good one thing rather than like four so-so things and just really maintain a level of prestige that people will want to come see it and make it an event. They want it to be an event. I don't think Star Wars really has that yet. It's sad because Star Wars was so oversaturated that when something like Andor came along, which was really extremely well made.
Yeah, it was excellent.
I think it was worthy of being that big event. I wonder how much bigger it would have been had we not had like the Acolyte or Skeleton Crew or even Ahsoka. Like, I don't know, things that I'm not saying they're bad, but things that maybe were not on the level and just they really put their focus on one thing. And I do think people seem to be getting back to that point, at least based on their mouth words.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is kind of the state we're in with the entertainment industry, right? Like all of these studios are contracting. They're all being a lot pickier with what they're choosing to go through with, sometimes to their own detriment, like what we've seen with the Wheel of Time. But I think with Star Wars, I want to say that Acolyte and Skeleton Crew were like the last ones that were announced in this initial blitz of stuff like 5 years ago during the pandemic or right around that time. I think obviously doing less is doing more. That's what Marvel is trying to do to course correct. They've been very transparent about this. Bob Iger, the Disney CEO, and Kevin Feige have both said, we're trying to focus on quality instead of quantity for a while, which is
for a while.
Totally what they need to do. Fantastic Four, I think, will be interesting. You know, it's a period piece. It's a little more accessible than a lot of Marvels because, one, it's a very recognizable superheroes, and two, you don't need to have seen every other MCU movie to go watch it. Presumably, unlike something like, you know, Captain America Brave New World or even Thunderbolts, which are very MCU connection heavy movies. Yeah. Like, you know, Thunderbolts, all those characters come from different movies.
And they were all like the B tier people from those movies, too.
But I mean, I did hear the Thunderbolts did very well. So,
me too. But again, neither of us saw it.
That's true. Superman, I think, is one of those perennial characters. Like that's not quite in the same issue because the old DCEU kind of died an ignominious death, and now this is a new start to it. It's a fresh thing. It feels fresh and new because it's so tonally different than what came before. But Superman, really, he's like, him and Batman are like two of the superheroes who they can just put out those movies in perpetuity, essentially. Like every so often, like people will just show up for a Superman or Batman movie. They're like the two most recognizable superheroes in the cinema. Well, like if you look at like the amount of time that they have had relevance at the movies, it's significantly more than any other one that we have.
They're huge. Know? I would argue that Batman's a bigger draw than Superman, though. Like Superman has had aborted franchise. Remember when we were like two and they tried Superman Returns, which is this kind of attempted comeback.
Yeah.
And it didn't go anywhere because it just didn't do well enough. Man of Steel didn't get a sequel either. So he is not seen to be as reliable. Batman, you can put him in anything and he'll draw.
Yeah.
It's to the point where you can, James Gunn said something where he talked about kind of Batman, the Batman problem.
Ooh, where the Batman problem.
He's trying to make a new Batman movie, but he's coming up against the problem of every story's been done, and there is already a Robert Pattinson Batman series that has a sequel in the works. So what is the reason for a separate Batman movie that stars somebody else as Batman, who is not Robert Pattinson, that will air alongside the Robert Pattinson Batman movies What is the reason for that to exist? And I feel like the thing he's not saying is there probably isn't one. But as much as he's bragging, not bragging, much as he's advertising that he does not have a Marvel-like mandate to produce X number of things a year, I feel like there probably is a mandate. Like, that's how popular Batman is. Bring us at least two Batman series. And
well,
so the mandates are still hanging around in some, in one way or another.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's tricky. I think less so that I feel like there's a mandate that bring us two Batmans. I think it's more so if he's going to build a DC universe using all of the most recognizable DC characters, like he said that Wonder Woman is the other most important one for him to get right. Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman. They're the big three of DC comics. Yeah. So if you're going to build a DC universe, it won't really be a true DC universe if you don't have those three characters in it, I think. It's very hard to make a case for a Batman-less DCU. So
he might not need like his own movie, or they can just somehow rope Pattinson in.
Well, there might be other options. Here's the thing with that though. That's exactly what Zack Snyder did. And it's true. I don't think it worked very well. So I think there's a lot of learning from mistakes that is happening with this new DCEU. They want Batman. They need Batman in some capacity, but they also don't want to mess up what Matt Reeves is doing because it's working. So it's like if they try to just like shoehorn in Robert Pattinson and you know, the next Superman movie and they mess it up, they risk messing up a very successful franchise they already have running with Batman. So yeah, these are big corporate problems when you are trying to you know, dip from the same pool or whatever. Same well. There we go. They're trying to take from the same well. How do they do it well? Your point about it, is it really necessary is a fair one, I think. And it really is a question of how much crossover stuff do they want in these. Seems like James Gunn is going whole hog on the whole DCEU thing because the Superman movie has a lot of characters in it.
Yeah, which again, it's this eternal dance between kind of a commercial viability and artistic integrity. How much the movie stand on its own? How much is it supposed to just be an advertisement for the next movie? They've been dancing with this since the beginning of the MCU. The dance is not over.
Yeah,
I think the first one will do well, though. Nicole says we're longer for a history movie. I think we'll have two in July. I think they will be hits. And I think that will be encouraging, and I think that will blow the industry up again until it gets too big and contracts again.
Man, I love how you just forgot about Jurassic Park there when you said two. But we can
Jurassic
just assume, yeah, there's a Jurassic Park. No, that's fair. It probably my excitement has been real middling for that. So I'm sure you're right. Superman.
No.
You got Pedro and Fantastic Four.
I haven't been on Jurassic stuff, really. I haven't seen any of them. I know they're really popular.
Any of them? No. You haven't seen the original Jurassic Park, Dan?
No, sorry. I haven't seen The Worlds.
Oh, okay. The Worlds, you could take or leave. That's pretty fair. Yeah, I mean, they advertised the third world as the end of the series. That's why it feels so silly that we're getting another one like 3 years
later. Wasn't that like a year ago?
It was like 3 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Which is weird, right? It feels like it was a year ago. But yeah, anyway, lots of stuff going on. Is there anything else? So do you think these franchises are getting too big? Do you think they're in danger of collapsing? Things like we're just talking about Dune or like Game of Thrones is going to have two shows. You have any thoughts you want to cap this off with?
No.
I think there are plentiful examples of things creatives can look to, corporate people can look to draw inspiration from and to take cautionary advice from. And it's up to you and me, if you want to pay me a consultant's fee, to navigate through the bramble. Moving on, Daniel, is there anything that you or me or anybody out there is just watching lately that you want to get off your chest?
The main thing I have been watching, So Murderbot, still in its first season, still enjoying it a lot. I've seen the whole season, so I'm kind of like rewatching it as it airs. I've also been watching, not sci-fi or fantasy, but the final season of Cobra Kai, I'm finally into. I watched the second chunk. Netflix really kind of killed, I think, the enthusiasm for Cobra Kai with its final season, because they did it in three blocks of five episodes, and they spread them apart by like 4 to 6 months. Like, there were big gaps between the episodes, and Cobra Kai is notoriously fast for production. Like, they don't have crazy special effects. It's basically just, can the stunt people do the karate? And when they, you know, they tend to be really quick. So it felt like Netflix is just spreading this out for their own ends. But I enjoyed the second part of the final season. I'm about to start the third. It's definitely like, you know, the show's gotten pretty wild and out there from its humble beginnings of just being about a washed up karate teacher who is the bad guy in the first movie, teaching a bullied kid to fight back against his bullies. We're really out there in the weeds now. There's one part where Daniel LaRusso gets put in a dog cage. He gets kidnapped. Right? So but that's part of the show's charm too. It's so ridiculous. It knows it's being ridiculous, and it invites you to laugh along with it. Usually through some cleverly timed musical drops and stuff. But yeah, so Cobra Kai is good. Murderbot's great. I finished reading this book, The Two Lies of Faven Scyth, which I need to review. It was pretty good. It's a pirate space opera. I really like the author, Megan E. O'Keefe. I didn't like this quite as much as her other series, The Devoured Worlds, which is like amazing. I would give it maybe like a 3.5 stars. It's a standalone, like, sapphic pirate adventure. And it's, you know, it's 300 pages. So it felt like it was a little shallower than I would have liked to make some of the reveals work. But still a good time. I had a good time with this book. So yeah, that's what I've been into. What about you?
I have two things. Again, I'll just reiterate, I have watched a very hotly anticipated, as yet unreleased program that I can say nothing about. All you can do is guess and seethe with jealousy. Julie enjoying Dead City. Looking forward to the Gilded Age coming out soon. I also, it might be our last show with you for a while next week. I wonder if we could do Another of the Seven Kingdoms next week, because I've been reading that, and it is quite wonderful. I got to say, the short story, The Hedge Knight, is pretty delightful. And I do have thoughts. Maybe we'll talk about that for like a special mini finale.
That's a great idea. I'm fully behind that. And listeners, people in the chat, we'll talk about why I'm not going to be around for a minute, probably after next episode. But I think ending it in Westeros for a little bit, you know, that feels right to me. So I don't know how far you are in it, but I know it's a short book.
I mean, it ain't long.
Yeah.
So no matter where I am, it should be fine. I'll talk about that later. But before we do that, let's get into the WIC News Lightning Round. We go over a bunch of stories. We couldn't get to the main body of the show and give our 20-second opinions. I have organized the crap out of these. I know exactly who is answering who.
Is that sarcasm? No,
it's not. I really did. Because there are several that were very you-specific. So I'm going to start by asking you, this one could be for any of us, but I'm just gonna ask you because it just felt that way. Daniel, 20 seconds on the clock for your response. Daniel, a man, an actor named Tom Rhys Harris will play the Batman villain Clayface in a movie about the Batman villain Clayface.
Do we need a Batman movie about Clayface?
James Gunn says yes.
All right. Well, James Gunn, I'm curious to see what you come up with. James Gunn said he was extremely impressed with this audition for this actor. It's funny because he's like a very good looking actor. Clayface is a big old blob of clay. He's not a looker. It's funny, but I'm curious. I'm cautiously curious about Clayface.
The Penguin show was good.
It was. If there's any superhero whose villains can hold their own movies, probably Batman. Here's one for you, Dan. Michael Sheen isn't sure if the final Good Omens episode will be released. What?
Yeah, Good Omens season 1, season 2, pretty fun. Then Neil Gaiman is accused of sexual impropriety by a lot of women, and the third season gets canceled, 200-single episode. I assume we would actually get it. It's the first time I'm hearing that it might not even be released. I think it'll probably be released. I'm not sure if they filmed it yet either. Weird place for Good Omens fans. Wow. Sorry that happened for a lot of reasons.
Condolences, Good Omens fans.
Mm-hmm. Daniel, what is the latest on the Brandon Sanderson book, his next novel, Isles of the Ember Dark?
Yeah, so this is Sanderson's fifth secret project. It was part of his crowdfunding campaign for Words of Radiance. He announced that he got it in early from the printers, so they're shipping it out early. It's shipping out to backers on July 1st instead of like November, so much earlier. It's going to be available for public buying not long after that. So, yeah, probably a new Brandon Sanderson book this summer, which is pretty cool.
Super cool.
I did back that Kickstarter. So I'm going to get that one because I was, right. I had FOMO. I had FOMO from the last time when I didn't. Mm-hmm. And just between these, I'll just say for Robert and Martha said, is the break a vacation or I hope we still will have Take the Black. There will still be Take the Black. I just mm-hmm. won't be on it for a little while. And we'll talk about that more next week. Dan, so Spaceballs 2,
woo-hoo!
The highly anticipated, long rumored, long awaited sequel to Spaceballs. It's releasing in 2027 with Rick Moranis and Bill Pullman.
Spaceballs was a formative movie experience for me. I saw before I saw anything with Star Wars in it. It's a Star Wars parody. I love Mel Brooks. He's coming. He's gonna play Yogurt. Rick Moranis coming up with the Darth Vader kind of parody, Dark Helmet. I have a lot of love for Spaceballs in my heart. It was one of my early movie loves when I was like a little honey kid. And yeah, I'm interested. I'll see it. Why not?
Yeah.
Daniel.
Who won't?
They are making an animated movie out of the popular video game Death Stranding with Raised by Wolves creator Aaron Gluzkowski writing the screenplay. You like all of these things, right?
I mean, I haven't played Death Stranding. So that's the video game from Hideo Kojima, who is also behind Metal Gear Solid, which I do love. So this is not adapting Death Stranding. It's a new story set in that world. And yeah, I love Aaron Gluzkowski, the creator of Raised by Wolves. Haven't seen him do a whole lot since Raised by Wolves was canceled. This is a really cool pairing. And in animation, I will be seated for that. Dan, so this is sad news for Star Trek fans. Sorry, okay. My Trekkies. Star Trek Strange New Worlds is officially ending with season 5.
I don't think it's that sad. I feel like if you get to 5 seasons of a show, you have had a decent life. I feel like you can't really be that upset it's not even a cancellation. Like season 3 hasn't even aired and they're saying like, okay, we're going to do another season after this and then another season after that and that'll end it. I think it's a nice long life for a TV show. I hear nothing but good things about it. And I like that they're giving it this much runway and planning this far ahead, frankly. I think it's nice. So, not sadness, just appreciation and respect. Daniel, it sounds like a movie based on author Joe Abercrombie's book, Best Serve Cold, which we heard was coming, may be in trouble. What's with that?
Yeah, so Abercrombie was on tour for his other new book, The Devils, recently, and he got asked about this a lot. This Best Served Cold movie he was making with Deadpool director Tim Miller, had Rebecca Ferguson set to star. He kind of said progress on it has kind of petered out. So it seems like it's stalled out. Doesn't seem likely it's going to move forward. He told a few different interviewers, don't hold your breath for it. So that's too bad.
It happens.
Hopefully we get the Devil's movie with James Cameron. That's a much smaller fish to fry than trying to adapt part of this huge, massive series, The First Law. Mm-hmm. Anyway, let's talk about a different huge, massive series that has a new movie coming out, I think, tomorrow, right?
No.
Yeah.
This weekend.
This very weekend. And that is 28 Years Later. Are you going to go see it?
If I have time, it'd be cool. I'm not sure I will have time, but it looks cool. I like the trailers. I saw 28 Days Later way back in the day. I like a good zombie movie, and this one looks like it's a good one. The original director's coming back, original writer's coming back. They both are going to do great things in the interim. It looks freaky. It looks scary. It looks intense. If I can see it, I will. And I hope everyone else who sees it enjoys it. All right, Daniel, that is our show. We are Take the Black Live. I am Dan. You are Dan. You are people who are watching, Dan and Dan. We talk every week about all things sci-fi, fantasy, movies, TV, books, etc. We do it right here every Wednesday afternoon at 2 p.m. CST on the Winners Coming Facebook page and YouTube page. Come on back. Hang out with us. Talk with us. We love it. Also, download us in podcast form wherever podcasts are available. Give us a like, give us a subscribe, give us a comment. We love it. We love you. And we would love to see you again. Goodbye.
Take care, all.
This podcast is brought to you by FanSided. Join our community of over 300 sites from sports to pop culture and everything in between.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your 2 free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.